have the same pitching staff. I still believe in my pitching staff. I still believe in we can do it. We got to play the game hard. We got to outplay them. We got to play better than them in order for us to win. Hopefully we do that. We got a good chance. We got to continue to play the game hard, you know. It's just, there's a lot of games we play.
Talking to a couple of guys would be pretty nice to do it in front of our fans, you know. We did what we had to do when we came here. You know, to be able to take 2 out of 3 in this hostile environment, it's pretty impressive. It'll be nice to have our fans going crazy, pumping us up, you know, hopefully be able to have a chance to do it in front of them.
We have all the faith in the world in JT. He's pitched well these last couple of months. We have nothing but faith in him.
We put ourselves in a fantastic position with winning 2 games at their place and having 2 chances to win 1 game now at our place, which we're a pretty good ball club when we do here. 7-game series, it's going to happen for both sides. I've seen our pitchers now too. We can only get better versus Arrieta. I mean, we no hit us through however long, and so we got to figure to improve upon that a little bit. And if you look, Tomlin's been great after losses for us, so he's been pretty much our stopper. So it's going to be a good matchup. It'll be a fun game. It'll be a tough one to win, and looking forward to it though. It will be ideal. We have a better situation to do it now. Ask anyone, we'll take it wherever we can get it. But yeah, it'd be nice to finally do it in Cleveland in front of our fans. If you look at our beating Detroit and Detroit to clinch the division, Boston, Toronto are both there on the road. It'd be nice to actually do one in front of the home crowd, so we're hoping we can get it done.
3 days off is going to be plenty, coming off of 58 pitches. He's been making really good pitches the whole postseason. I think he's going to go out there and do it again for us.
I think they've hit a wall a while ago, and I think they're just battling through it. You know, they've all looked really sharp. I think getting them out there often has actually helped command and things like that, especially the relievers. Obviously, you couldn't keep up this pace forever. You know, I think they got 2 more games of really good pitching left in them.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
It is indeed the extravaganza. It is indeed game day. And you know how we have to start this show. Game 6, World Series, baseball's championship on the line. The first championship for the Cleveland Indians in 68 years. The first time winning and clinching a world championship in Cleveland, in that particular city, since 1920.
No, the 64 Browns were at home.
That work with me here. You know where we're going with this.
Let me tell you something you already know. The world ain't all sunshine and rainbows. It's a very mean and nasty place, and I don't care how tough you are, it will beat you to your knees and keep you there permanently if you let it. You, me, or nobody is going to hit as hard as life. But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward. That's how winning is done. Now, if you know what you're worth, then go out and get what you're worth. But you gotta be willing to take the hit. And not pointing fingers saying you ain't where you want to be because of him or her or anybody. Cowards do that, and that ain't you. You're better than that.
Screaming rock. Absolutely. You gotta be better than that. The Cubs are gonna get some hits tonight. But you gotta take those hits. And keep moving forward. Why? You know why.
That's how winning is done.
That's why. It's not going to be easy. It's not going to be sunshine and rainbows for 9 innings. But you got to take the hits and keep moving forward.
That's how winning is done.
Scream it out loud, Rock.
That's how winning is done.
And you want to do it tonight. You got to do it tonight. And you want to know why you got to do it tonight? Because, again, there is no tomorrow. Championship time in the state of Ohio. It is winning time.
There is no tomorrow. There is no tomorrow.
You cannot think that there's a game seven tomorrow. You cannot even expect. You should treat this the way they should treat this tonight is like as if this is game number seven. There is no backup plan. I don't want to hear about, well, if we don't get it done tonight, we got Corey Kluber tomorrow. You can't think like that because
there is no tomorrow.
Scream it.
There is no tomorrow.
There is no tomorrow. You get it done tonight or you don't get it done at all. This is the way it has to be. This is exactly how winning is done. You can't play around with these guys and give them hope and give them the belief that somehow, some way, they are the team of destiny, that 108 years of futility from 1908 is coming to an end in our house. If you're a Cleveland fan, in your house, you can't give them that belief. That is not how you see. Look, you kill an ant with a sledgehammer. That's how you do it. You don't play around with it a little while and pick it apart. No, you just crush it. The time to do it in front of 40,000 screaming nut jobs out there at Progressive Field in Cleveland, Ohio, is tonight. It has to be tonight because there truly cannot be a tomorrow. That is what must happen.
That's how winning is done.
Exactly. Scream it out loud, Rock. This has not happened for the Cleveland Indians since 1920. We all remember four months ago, Jim Cushlin, you know, and I know people in Northwest Ohio are, you know, they're not exactly in the city where it was happening anyway, but you understand my point. They didn't even get to celebrate the championship that the Cavaliers won to break the 52-year drought out there, but from 2,500 miles away. The championship was, the champagne was flowing in Oakland, California, a visitor's locker room. It wasn't flowing in Cleveland, Ohio. It wasn't floating in Northern Ohio. Flowing, I should say. I mean, it might have been, but the team wasn't there. This is an opportunity to do it in a much more special way. Instead of celebrating in front of fans that hate you, you celebrate in front of fans that absolutely love you, and you just enjoy the moment that has not happened in that town for that franchise since 1920. They have to get it done tonight. Do you agree, Mr. Cushlin?
Yeah, I could definitely agree with that. You don't want to mess with a Game 7 kind of thing, even with the Kluber and yada, yada, yada. You don't want to mess with it because of exactly what you said. The Cubs will feel even better about themselves than they already do by forcing this into a Game 6 and at least salvaging one in Wrigley. You don't want to get them any thoughts. You want to nip this one in the bud absolutely right now. And on that note, by the way, in terms of you can't, you know, think, well, we might have a Game 7 tomorrow. No. If that means Miller and Cody Allen throw two innings today and then maybe two more each tomorrow, so be it. You have to play as if this is a Game 7. I can't disagree with that.
Yeah, and that is exactly what I expect them to do. And you know what else, to be quite frank? I don't think the fan base, anybody that has been rooting for that team for their entire lives the way you have or I have or anybody here listening right now has rooted for the Indians, they can't take 24 hours of not knowing. They cannot take 24 hours until the ultimate pressure game and possibly blowing a 3-1 lead. I lived through the 07 3-1 lead over the Red Sox in the ALCS. I watched Cy Young Award winner CC Sabathia going in game 5, ready to clinch this thing, knowing full well I had a backup because the guy that finished fourth in the Cy Young balloting, 19-game winner Fausto Carmona, was going the next night if it didn't get done the first night. And neither one of them got it done. And then it fell to Jake Westbrook, steady Jake, but not the dominating force that the other two guys were. And suddenly, shockingly, stunningly, indeed, the Red Sox come back from 3-1 down to take it away, the trip to the World Series that would have resulted in a sweep that the Indians would have put on the Colorado Rockies in the same way that the Red Sox ended up doing it. That is what would have happened. I can't possibly tolerate another, 24 hours of wondering if we're about to do it again, but this time in a worse fashion. In a worse fashion than the 97 World Series being blown by Mesa, in a worse fashion than the 2007 ALCS that I just described. This would be the ultimate gut punch It would be the ultimate crotch shot. It would be the ultimate in humiliation and degradation. There's just no other way to say it. When you are beating the team that had 103 wins, the team that the entire nation is rooting for outside of your city and maybe St. Louis, where Cardinals fans hate the Cubs, when you have them on the ropes 3-1, you finish it in 5 or 6. You do not even give it a chance. You don't even think about letting this thing get to a game 7. You just can't put everybody through that, least of all yourselves, where the pressure would then be squarely not on the team that hasn't won a title in 108 years. The pressure would be squarely on the shoulders and the minds and the hearts and the souls of the Indians players.
Yeah, very, very well said. And those are some of the reasons you want to do it today. It's all about not messing with the game 7 and what the Cubs may be, you know, thinking. And, hey, we took 2 in a row from these guys and we absolutely needed to. We finally are playing loose and all that stuff. Even if you have a Corey Kluber waiting in the wings, you just don't want to mess with it. You just don't. And I like some of the things I played the montage. I think it was Mike Napoli who said this, and he said it very well. Remember, last time the Indians saw Arrieta back in game 2, also in Cleveland, what was it, no-hitter through 5? And he basically said, look, we've all seen him once, so we expect to do better against him. And I'm sure the Cubs are, you know, acting the same way, but no matter how it's done, you have to find a way to win this one tonight. Don't even mess with going to Game 7, especially with how everybody outside of our fan base, Bob, apparently is viewing this, i.e. with those Cubs-colored glasses.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Outside of the Indians fan base, and like I said, maybe the people of St. Louis, because the Cardinals fans hate the Cubs, too.
And don't forget your random White Sox fan. They hate them, too.
Yeah, and then the occasional people on the other side of the city. That's fair, too. This is the 65th time, if you're scoring at home, that the World Series has stood at 3-2. Of the previous 64 times, the team with the 3-2 lead has gone on to win the series 43 of them. So 43 out of 64, that's 67%. That means the Indians still have a very, very great chance of closing this thing out and winning this series. And I have no problem with that. It still makes me feel good. I just don't want to get into the sweat box that we'll all be into for the next 24 hours or so, or about 21 hours, 3 hours after first pitch tonight. They'll start it over again tomorrow night at the same time. I don't want to have to live with those butterflies and those stomach pains, and everybody's going to be calling off work tomorrow. Nobody's going to be able to concentrate. Everybody's going to be wondering, are they about to blow the one golden opportunity they had? As the lovable losers themselves, the team that Hollywood saw fit to make a movie out of their misery and their band of baseball misfits called Major League in 1989, the lovable losers themselves have an opportunity to finally end their drought against the only team with a longer lovable loser record. And if they allow that to get away, thus making them the team with the longest World Series drought in history, championship in history, I just don't know if I can handle that.
I don't know too
many people who could.
I probably couldn't either, and here's another thing I wouldn't be able to handle. I'll be straight up with this, and if we're talking about a Game 7 tomorrow, this will come up. You know what's going to start happening if this series gets tied as we go into tomorrow. All the little memes out there about, I remember a Cleveland team in 3-1 just recently, as if to taunt us and rub that salt in the wound. That I don't want to have to respond to.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. And by the way, here's some more numbers for you. In addition, of the 64 previous occurrences in which the World Series stood 3-2, the team with the 3-2 lead won Game 6 on 25 of those occasions. So that's only 39%. So it's less than a coin flip that they win tonight based on those previous 64 occasions. That has also been the case in 7 of the last 12 occurrences, the most recent being the 2013 Red Sox. The 5 teams that were the exception in that time were the 24, again, this is 7 and 12, so the 5 in that 12 that were the exception, were the 2014 Giants, 2011 Rangers, 2002 Giants, 2001 Yankees, and then naturally, the 97 Marlins. 3 of those 5 eventually lost the series in 7 games. Of the 39 times that a team leading 3-2 has dropped Game 6, they've gone on to win the series in Game 7 just 18 times. That's 46%. 9 of the last 11 teams to lose Game 6 with that 3-2 lead have gone on to lose the series. In other words, I can't say it loudly enough. I cannot repeat it often enough. This is just the fact of the matter. There is no tomorrow. If you lose game six, nine of the last 11 teams to be up 3-2 and losing game six to make it 3-3 have gone on to lose the series. It's just that simple.
There is no tomorrow. There is no tomorrow.
Scream it, Apollo. It's true. Those numbers are very, very disturbing when you break them down like that.
Yeah, they are.
Now, a little bit more on hey,
real quick,
here.
If you could. Read
yes, go ahead.
Those couple of teams, like you said, 0-1 Yankees. Now, read those again, if you could.
Okay, well, let me go back to the original stat then so it has context.
Okay.
Of the last 64 times, this will be the 65th time that the World Series stood at 3-2 going into the Game 6. In addition, of the last 64 occurrences, the team up 3-2 has won Game 6 25 times. So that's 39.1%. That has been the case. The team with the 3-2 lead has won Game 6 seven of the last 12 times they've had a 3-2 lead. Those included the 2013 Red Sox, 2009 Yankees, 2003 Marlins, 96 Yankees, 95 Braves, 93 Blue Jays, and 92 Blue Jays. The five teams that were the exception to that rule in that time, the five teams that did not win Game 6 out of the last 12 when they were up 3-2 were the 2014 Giants, 2011 Rangers, 2002 Giants, 2001 Yankees, and 97 Marlins.
That's the one I was looking for, because as you were reading those last five teams, I was thinking four of those five were on the road when they dropped them. The only one at home was the 97 Marlins.
Oh, well, I'm glad you brought that up.
That's why I wanted you to read those five specifically again.
Well, that's precisely where I was going before you asked me to clarify that, because now I'm going to give you some stats about the home team in Game 6 in these 3-2 series. Tonight marks the 66th Game 6 in World Series history overall. The home team in Game 6s is 43-25. That's a 66% winning clip overall in Game 6 of the series. The home team in Game 6 of the World Series has won four consecutive times, six of the last seven, and nine of the last 11. So we have some very interesting things here that, again, underscore the fact that
there is no tomorrow. There is no tomorrow.
If you're listening to these now, the home team has won nine of the last 11 Game 6s. The home team has won... Hold on, where did that stat go? I lost it for a second here. Nine of the last 11, they have won six of the last seven and four straight in Game 6s. If they lose Game 6, however, talking about this year's Indians, we go back to that previous stat that I gave you a moment ago. And that previous stat is not a good one. That if you blow Game 6 when you're up 3-2, nine of the last 11 teams that have done that have lost Game 7 as well. So there simply is no tomorrow. There's just no getting around that. Nine of the last 11 teams to lose Game 6 with a 3-2 lead have gone on to lose the series in the seventh game. Let's see. A couple more. Oh, let me extend that nine of the last 11 number. I could also, wow, this is actually very, very encouraging. The home team in Game 6 of the World Series, I just gave you, they've won four straight, six of the last seven, nine of the last 11 Game 6s have been won by the home team, 14 of the last 17, and 15 of the last 19, dating all the way back to 1980. So again, the odds are very, very much on the Indian side in that regard, that the home team has won all of these Game 6s. The four road teams to win Game 6 in that span going back to 1980, the four road teams include the 81 Dodgers, that was at the Yankees, the 92 Blue Jays, that was at Atlanta, the 97 Indians, that was in Florida, and the 2003 Marlins, that was at New York.
And the out of those four, Bob, if I'm not mistaken, three of those four, that game six was the clincher for them. Obviously, we know which one wasn't.
Right. That's exactly right, in 97. So there it is. It's all laid out for you. All of the odds say get it done tonight and don't monkey around with dealing with tomorrow. You can't mess. And you know, this is obviously a very, very difficult thing to wrap your brain around. Because Josh Tomlin has been very, very good. In fact, he has been outstanding this postseason. But quite honestly, Jake Arrieta is in a better position. Tomlin is going on short rest. Arrieta is going on extended rest. And Arrieta took a no-no into the sixth inning in game number two against the Indians. So it's not a good matchup for the Indians in that regard. The one thing you can't quantify, however, though, is... And I don't want to sound cheesy, like I'm writing Hallmark cards here, but his heart. That's the one thing you can't account for. Josh Tomlin just seems to typify. He symbolizes. He embodies the Triple G that I've been calling this season's postseason Indians. The Triple G, the gritty, gutty grinders. That's Josh Tomlin. This is a guy I think who could go on 2 days rest. And probably still be just as effective because he's not pitching with his arm. He's pitching with his heart. And he's pitching with guile. And he's pitching with savvy.
Not to mention in his first start, he only threw, 58 pitches?
Exactly, because they got him out of there.
Exactly, yep.
And that's, of course, you know, that's a tribute, again, to the one of the greatest managers in the game. And they may be the two best managers in the game right now are opposing each other in Terry Francona and Joe Maddon. But that's Terry Francona for you, knowing exactly what is coming. He's not just playing today. He's playing tomorrow. He's not playing checkers. Terry Francona is always playing chess. And that is something that could, you know, certainly help the Indians tonight. In the postseason, Josh Tomlin is 2-0 with an ERA of 1.76. Jake Arrieta in the postseason is 1-1 with a 3.78. So it looks like advantage Tomlin, but if you do add up the fact that Tomlin is off of his regular routine, no matter how many pitches he threw in his last start, he's off his regular days of rest. Jake Arrieta is actually on extended rest. Now, sometimes, by the way, that can be a problem for the guy who's got the extended rest. Sometimes, you know, you are off your rhythm as well. But the opportunity is right there right now for the Cleveland Indians to put this thing away, to do it at home. Again, the first time they will have done that since 1920. And just cannot underscore it often enough that this must get done tonight. You do not want to drag this out and ask Corey Kluber to do the same thing he did twice already in this series, which is be an unmitigated ace, just an indefatigable stud. A guy who just has carved up one of the best lineups in baseball twice. You can't demand that he do it a third time. And for the second of the three, on short rest. You've got to close this thing out tonight. By the way, if you're wondering, just to throw one more group of stats at you before we take your time out here at the bottom of the hour for SportsCenter. This is the sixth time that in Indians history that they have led a best-of-seven postseason series 3-2. Not World Series now, just postseason. Sixth time, they have been up 3-2. They have gone on to win the series four of the previous five times, including the 1920 best-of-nine series. And then the previous five instances include 1920 World Series versus Brooklyn, 1948 World Series versus Boston, 1995 ALCS versus Seattle, won Game 6 to win the series, 97 ALCS over Baltimore, won Game 6 to win the series, and then 2007 ALCS to Boston, which we talked about a few minutes ago, lost Game 6 and then lost the series in seven games. So history is on the Indian side to get it done, but they got to get it done tonight. And that's where we're going to leave it for now. We're going to take a quick time out, then on the other side, we're going to go to Chicago. And we're going to talk to Al Yellett again, a wonderful reporter and contributor to the Cubs website, bleedcubbyblue.com. Very good guy, but we're going to go at it. We're going to talk about what it's going to take for the Indians to win this thing. I'd love you to be a part of this, too. And I want you to dial us up as soon as you are ready at 866-240-1065. 866-240-1065. Let's get you up on the radio. Talking World Series action for this first hour, at least, right here on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket.
Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Rolling on our weed is 3:38. It is winning time. Make no mistake about it. It must be done tonight. Why?
There is no tomorrow.
That's why.
There is no tomorrow.
That is exactly why. There cannot be a Game 7, even in the mindset of any single member of that Cleveland Indians organization. And you know what I believe? I truly believe that there isn't. I firmly believe that they are looking at this as this is it. This is the season. It all comes down to tonight. They're not thinking, hey, it's okay. Just relax. We got a backup. We got another backup plan. We can do it tomorrow. If it comes down to Game 7 and they go into a Game 7, even in their own yard, with the Cubs having won two in a row, all of the momentum, not to mention the entire country, save for the state of Ohio and maybe a few people in St. Louis, Cardinals fans who hate the Cubs, and maybe a few people in Chicago who are White Sox fans, but virtually the rest of the country is going to be driving that Cubs team onward. I do not want it to get there. I don't think it will get there. It's all got to get done tonight. We always like to check in with some folks on the other side of our conversations and our confrontations. Indians and Cubs, game number 6 tonight. We welcome back Al Yellen, who writes for BleedCubbyBlue.com, an outstanding Cubs fan website. Online. And Al, thank you so much for spending the time with us this afternoon. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me. It almost sounds like you guys are running a little scared. Got to be tonight. Got to be tonight. Well, you know, for the Cubs, it really does have to be tonight.
Yeah.
It's win or go home.
Well, truthfully, you know, I think that there's something to that. When you play with the there is no tomorrow attitude, which, of course, the Cubs had to play with in Game 5, and they got to play with again tonight, I think there is that sense of urgency. Not that it wasn't urgent for the Indians at Wrigley in Game 5 on Sunday night, but there is something to that, and I think that would be in the Indians' best interest to kind of approach it that way. Not that, hey, it's all right, chill, we got tomorrow too. They've really got to look at this like this is for everything. They're playing like it's for everything because for the Cubs it is, and I think the Indians have to match that same intensity.
In some ways, you don't want to put that pressure on yourself either. You know, I don't want to say that this was the reason the Cubs lost 2 out of 3 in Chicago, but, you know, Wrigleyville and Wrigley Field and the area surrounding was just, it was a crazy place for 3 days, and I think that might have been a little distracting to the Cubs. You know, as much as they tried to do their normal everyday routine, I don't know that they were really able to do so. In some ways, going on the road might be a little easier. They're away from all the craziness that is Wrigleyville, and I'm sure it'll be crazy there tonight, even though there's no ball game. You know, all the bars and restaurants in the area will be packed for people watching the game, but they'll be watching something that's happening a few hundred miles away, and for the Cubs may just be able to relax a little bit.
Al Yellen is my guest. He is with BleedCubbyBlue.com online. And Al, you know, this is going to go back to what we talked about before Game 1. Did we have you on before Game 1, or was it Game 2, actually, when we invited you to join us? But we had a great conversation. I think it was before the whole thing started. I can't swear to it. But we talked about how we both agree, and I think anybody with common sense agrees, that the baseball system of deciding home field advantage is screwed up. The you know, the C-League messing around with the All-Star game and the overreaction to a tie and all that nonsense really is silly. And it should be in Chicago for games 6 and 7, and it should have been in Cleveland for the last 3. But it is what it is, and let me throw some of the numbers at you that I'm sure you are already aware of. For the Cubs, they play and they have performed so much better at home this entire season. Their ERA at Wrigley, 2.72 as a staff. On the road, 3.60. Their opponent's batting average at Wrigley, 2.03. On the road, 2.21. Home runs per 9, 0.88 at home, 1.14 on the road, and most importantly, the winning percentage. The Cubs win 70%, 7.04 at home, 5.68 on the road. How big do you think that advantage will be for the Indians tonight, thanks to Mr. Selig and their silly rules? I don't take any pride in that. The Indians didn't deserve the home field advantage, but they have it, and it is an advantage.
Now I'll go back and just point out that the Cubs did win 1 of 2 games in Cleveland just a week ago, so maybe you can throw that out the window. The Cubs had the best record in the major leagues on the road this year at 46-34. I know the Indians were very good at home all year. They tied for the best record in the American League at home. So, you know, those two things.
And all of the stats that I just gave you about the Cubs at home on the road are reversed for the Indians. They have been an extraordinarily better team at home. And it has been where they've, you know, I mean, obviously that's why they swept in, you know, against Boston and then took 4 out of 5 from Toronto. I mean, they've just been a tremendous baseball team at home.
Right. But, you know, the one advantage that the Cubs have, and I know they're excited about it, and we're, you know, we as fans are excited about it, is the return of Kyle Schwarber to the starting lineup. And Joe Maddon's done something very interesting with this lineup. He has, throughout most of the second half of the season and the postseason, he has gone 1 through 4 with Dexter Fowler, here, Chris Bryant, Anthony Rizzo, and Ben Zobrist. But Kyle Schwarber, coming back to the lineup now, is going to bat second tonight, and everybody else is going to move down one. That's both in an effort to get Schwarber as many at-bats as possible, and also most of last year when he was playing regularly, he did bat second, so that's a familiar place for him.
Yeah, and certainly that is a big deal for Chicago to get Schwarber's bat back in the lineup, and obviously he has just been a tremendous asset. Were you surprised that they did not use him more than they did, obviously, in just pinch-hitting roles in Chicago? I know they said he wasn't medically cleared, but I don't know exactly what that means. Does that mean, he couldn't overrule this and say, hey, Doc, I appreciate that, but I feel fine, and I want to get out there because I want to bat? Was this something that Joe Maddon could have left up to the player, or was this just everybody who's going to say what the doc says?
No, I think everybody was going with what the doctor's recommendation were. The bottom line is that they said he might have been about 60%, and Kyle Schwarber isn't going to play at 60%. If he's going to go out there, he wants to be 100%. So I think everybody was on the same page. They would have liked to probably have used him in more critical pinch-hitting situations. There just weren't any.
Right.
He had been on deck a couple times on Sunday night. It just didn't come to the spot where he could have batted. The only other place he could have been used was to bat for Aroldis Chapman, but Chapman wasn't going to be taken out of that game. So, they were only able to use him once in the entire series in Chicago. It didn't turn out necessarily to be a turning point one way or the other. Now they've got him for four, maybe more, at-bats in Game 6 and hopefully again in Game 7.
We're talking with Al Yellen of BleedCubbyBlue.com right here on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket, Indians and Cubs, game number 6 tonight. The Indians pitching this postseason has just been ridiculous. The Boston Red Sox were the highest-scoring team in the American League. Toronto Blue Jays, I think, were second in the American League, or third. The Cubs, obviously, were second only to the Colorado Rockies in runs scored. And yet the Indians, in their entire postseason, 10-3 thus far, have averaged or have allowed less than 2 runs per game. It's unbelievable to do that, especially without 2 of their top 3 starters, Carrasco and Salazar, being able to do that or being able to perform. Tomlin has been lights out as well. He's 2-0 with a 1.76 in the postseason, but he is on short rest tonight. What do you expect to see against Tomlin? What do you expect those Cubs to be able to do against Tomlin and this amazing pitching staff with the run that they've got going in this postseason?
Well, Terry Francona is really rolling the dice here. I mean, really, he doesn't have many other options but to use these guys on short rest. Josh Tomlin's never pitched on short rest, or not in several years. Whether he's out of gas or not, I guess we'll find out tonight. The Cubs couldn't do much with him in game. I'm sorry, this is all kind of a blur, but yeah, game two, they did hit him.
No, I'm sorry. No, that was Bauer. Game 3.
In game 3, no, yes, they couldn't do much with him in game 3, and I'm just hoping that the short rest is going to allow the Cubs to hit him. They have to lay off of the curveball. That's what really hurt the Cubs. They were flailing at pitches way out of the strike zone, and that's really where Tomlin is at his best, is throwing those breaking pitches outside the zone that look like they're in the zone, and he can be very effective when he does that. The Cubs got to start laying off those pitches if they can. Maybe they can work into some long counts. One thing that the Cubs are certainly aware of is that only 2 pitchers in the major leagues this year allowed more home runs than Josh Tomlin. It's going to be a warm night. The wind, if it is a factor, is going to be blowing out. That could be
if you're living on that, Al, if you guys are living on that, you better find something else, my friend, because so much of that was the August from hell for Josh Tomlin. Since the calendar flipped to September and then into this postseason in October, he has just been lights out. One of the best pitchers, quite frankly, not only in the American League, but all of baseball. He has been unbelievably consistent. And here's the other thing, Al, too. You're right about the short rest. He hasn't done it, but as my colleague here, Jim Cushlin, pointed out a few minutes ago, he only threw 58 in that start in Game 3 because of the way Terry Francona used this. He had him go 4 2/3 through 58 pitches. So if there's such a thing as being on full rest, on short rest, odd as that sounds, this could be it. A guy who really only went half a game, not even quite that, in a win in Game 3.
And this is one of the things that the Cubs really have to focus on in their game plan, is try to get to him early, because if Tomlin gets into that fifth inning again, and the game's close, then you're going to see Andrew Miller, and then it really is lights out.
Right, yeah, and boy, we can talk about the relievers in a moment and the trades that brought Chapman and Miller to the Cubs and Indians, respectively, from the Yankees and the impact they've had on this series and on this postseason in just a minute. But first, Jim Cushion's got a question. Jim, go ahead.
Well, actually, in that case, and I am kind of going to go to the relievers. I was thinking about what Chapman did the other day. It's well known that he doesn't usually like to do that, but in the situation they were in, he said yes, sir, to Joe Maddon, and he went out there and threw the 2 2/3, even took it back because, as you point out, Al, they didn't want to remove him from the game. Now he had the day off, so I imagine he's going to be full bore. Would we see, especially if it's close, or in this case, like a Game 5, if the Cubs are winning in those middle innings, would we see Chapman for 2 or 3 innings like we did in Game 5?
That's a really good question. I mean, now you're down to literally the last two games of the season, and then you got the whole winter to rest. So will Joe Maddon try and use him for multiple innings? He threw 42 pitches on Sunday. That's the second most he's ever thrown in his career. I'm sure that he will. Joe will ask him, "Can you do it?" If he feels like he can do it, he'll say so. And if he gives the go, I don't think Joe Maddon will hesitate to use him in the highest leverage situation that he needs him for.
Would he still be available then if he goes? I mean, he got an 8-out save the other night. If he had to do something similar, I mean, I don't know. Would he be able to go tomorrow? And what do you think he'd have if he had to?
I think you have to because, like I said, this is it. These are the last two games. You can rest your arm for 4 months after this one. And, got to give it everything you got because this is it. You either win or go home.
Jake Arrieta has been a little bit up and a little bit down in this postseason. Obviously, he took a no-hitter into the sixth inning against the Indians in Game 2. But overall, an ERA, a postseason ERA of, 3.78, I want to say. So he's had some good moments. He's had some bad moments. What kind of an Arrieta on longer rest? It's odd. The opposite of Tomlin, he's actually on extended rest. What do you expect out of him tonight?
I thought Jake was a little bit overamped in the first inning of Game 2. And then he settled down, and as you say, he took a no-hitter into the middle innings. That's the Jake we've seen for the last couple of years, and he's taken no-hitters into the middle or late innings several times, and of course he's thrown two of them over the last couple of seasons. Mm-hmm. And this is the Jake that the Cubs have to have tonight to shut the Indians' offense down and put together a couple, 2-3 runs maybe off of Tomlin before Andrew Miller can get into the game. That's really got to be the game plan. Score on them early. Have Jake shut the Indians' offense down through maybe 6 innings, and then I think you've got a chance to win.
That recipe was kind of the way it went in the early part of this series, but the last two games not so much. The team that scored first in each of the last two ended up not winning, and that was the recipe really for the Indians all the way through the playoffs in the division and in the League Championship Series. Get a lead, get your starter to get you to the fourth or fifth, even one game. Of course, we know they had to go bullpen day and everybody went like 2 innings, but get a lead and then hand it off to that bullpen and coast home. That did not work in each of the last two games for either one of these clubs, so it's not a given that scoring first is going to be the recipe here.
Right. On the other hand, the Cubs did do a good job in coming from behind, they came from behind trailing 2-1 to the Dodgers. They came from behind twice against the Giants in memorable games in the division series. They didn't win the first one, but then they had that 4-run rally that won the, game 4 in the division series against the Giants. These guys can do it. In some ways, they have to stop thinking about hitting home runs. That 4-run rally, there wasn't a home run to be seen, and most of them were just little bouncy little singles up the middle. That's all they have to do, find gaps, find holes. They don't have to crush the ball out of the ballpark.
You are obviously, pulling for your Cubbies, and we are pulling for the Indians here. Let's see if we can agree on this. Do you find Joe Buck as insufferable as everybody here in Ohio finds him in his blatant rooting for the Chicago Cubs with every single call? Do you notice it there, or is it lost on fans of the Cubs?
I got to tell you that there are so many Cubs fans I've talked to can't stand him because they think he's rooting for the Indians.
Oh, get the hell out of here.
No,
don't
true.
You even say that with a straight face.
I
you are totally that, kidding.
You know what it is? I think that Joe Buck is an announcer who tries to get on the bandwagon of what the wave is for that particular game. So, if the Indians are having a good game in the World Series, he's going to push that as the storyline. And if the Cubs are having a good game, he'll do the same thing.
It doesn't matter what kind of a game they're having, because on a call-by-call basis, I mean, you know, Lindor, line drive to right, scores Santana, and the Indians are up 1-0. Bryant sends one to deep left. It's a fly ball out. But the voice changes. The tone changes. He's hyperventilating everything every time there's a hard-hit Cubs ball. And when the Indians are doing it, it's about as monotone as you can even imagine. It is so obvious that he wants the story. And I know he works for Fox. He wants a game seven. He wants the story. He wants everybody to be there. He wants the ratings and all the rest. But he's got to at least pretend to be objective as he calls these games. Because I can tell you this, he is hated. He is hated, at least in the northern part of Ohio, among the people that I speak with.
Well, there's a lot of Cubs fans who don't like him because they think that Buck roots for the Cardinals all the time, too. But I will tell you, I was in the ballpark for games 3, 4, and 5, so I can't, you know, speak for what was said on television those days, because I did not see those television broadcasts. As I'm not in Cleveland tonight, I'll be watching on TV with you guys. I'll kind of pay a little more attention to that and see what I think of whether he seems to be favoring one side or the other.
I'll give you a little bit of a hint as to how bad it is. The Cavaliers were playing the Magic, Saturday night, I think it was. I think it was Saturday, maybe it was Sunday. Jimmy, maybe you know. It was Saturday, thank you. But they were playing the Magic on Saturday, and it's, you know, like a lot of NBA arenas do. I don't know if the Bulls do it or not, but I'm sure they probably do. When the other team is shooting free throws, the home club will put up video images of things that will make the fans boo and go crazy just to distract the free throw shooter. Joe Buck's face was a fixture on the big video board whenever the Magic was shooting free throws, because the Cavaliers knew exactly what I was just talking about, how the Indians fans felt about the way this guy was called in the World Series and openly rooting for the Cubs. So it got that bad that it seeped into the basketball arena.
Interesting.
Jim Cushing's got another one for you. Al, go right ahead, Jim.
You know, and trying to think of what area or what his game plan would be. Obviously, you know, you mentioned the fact that Schwarber's going to be back for the Cubs because there's the DH once again. My question is, if you're Arrieta and the Cubs pitching staff, name someone not named Francisco Lindor who's the guy you're wanting to make sure, oh, we got to get this guy out.
Kipnis, without question, Jason Kipnis. I mean, he's been hitting the ball all over the field the entire series. I'd be much more worried about him. Not much more worried about him than Lindor, but Jason Kipnis, he's a really impressive ball player.
Yeah, Lindor is ridiculous. Lindor is hitting, I think, 430-something in the postseason and 460-something here in the World Series. He is as locked in as anybody could be. He's 22 bleeping years old. I don't know how that kind of talent and that kind of poise comes in somebody that young, but there it is. Hey, Al, we're going to wrap it up with this, a little history for you here, okay? And you're not going to like it, but I want to get your reaction to it. The home team in Game 6 of the World Series has won 4 consecutive Game 6s, 6 of the last 7 times, 9 of the last 11, 14 of the last 17, and 15 of the last 19, dating back to 1980. So if history is any indication there, the Cubs have a 4-15 chance of winning game number 6 at Progressive Field now that the Indians, thanks to that quirky thing that they did, the Indians have the home field.
Nobody ever said winning the World Series was going to be easy for anybody. So, yeah, the odds are not great. But, you know, the Cubs got to game 6 when it for a while didn't look like they were going to get there. So here we are at game 6. And I'll just say something, you know, however this turns out, this has really been a great series. It's had great storylines on both sides. It's had real good play. It's had no real controversy. It's got 2 great fan bases. I've really enjoyed it.
I have too. I really have too. And by the way, I shouldn't give you this statistic, but in the interest of fairness and inclusion, I'll throw you this one just so it'll make you feel a little bit better if you do win tonight. We talked about this before you came on too. 9 of the last 11 teams to lose game 6 when they had a 3-2 lead, which would describe the Indians here. 9 of the last 11 teams to lose a game 6 have gone on to lose the series in 7. So if the Cubs do get it tonight, then it is indeed very, very likely, according to recent history anyway, that they are going to win in Game 7. And that's why I said the Indians are going to have to approach this thing as if... Oh, we didn't hear it. Hold on a second. As if...
There is no tomorrow! There is no tomorrow!
In the same way the Cubs do. Indians win. Obviously, they're the champions. If the Cubs win, it doesn't look good for the Indians in Game 7. So it all comes down to tonight, Al Gillen.
You got it. And, you know, I'm just... In some ways, happy enough just to see the Cubs playing baseball in November.
Well, I got to tell you, I don't disagree with that at all. And I said before the start of the postseason began that if my Indians were not in the World Series, I would be pulling for the Cubs like the rest of America because of the story.
And I think Cubs fans, I think Cubs fans, you know, if the Cubs weren't in this series, I think would be doing the same for the Indians.
Yeah, and you know, and why not? 108 years for one and 68 years for the other, the two longest suffering franchises in baseball. Why not? I would be doing the same thing. But obviously, as things stand now, I hate you guys. I hate you with a passion, and I hope we pound on you about 11 to nothing tonight. How's that?
I wouldn't go for that, but I understand the sentiment.
Al Yellen, bleedcubbyblue.com is the website where you can find Al. Al, thanks for the time. We appreciate the back and forth. Enjoy the game tonight.
You too. Thanks for having me.
You got it. All right. I will enjoy the game if the Indians win. I will not enjoy the game, though, from a broadcast perspective. Jim Cushlin, again, Joe Buck has made this as plain can be, that he is pulling for the story of the Chicago Cubs, pulling for the 1908, the Billy Goat, the Bartman, and all of the other things that have, you know, that have plagued this franchise or perceived to have plagued this franchise for 108 years. He has been pulling for that to end, but I still think that a lot of that has to do with TV, has to do with ratings, has to do with we want to get to a Game 7 for Fox's sake. And I wonder if maybe if the Indians don't win tonight, if tomorrow he'd be more objective, because now he got what he wanted, which is the Game 7, a huge rating, probably a 15, 16, 18, somewhere in that number rating for a Game 7 involving Cubs and Indians, and maybe he'd be a little bit more objective then. But then again, based on what we've heard from him, he's you know, there's nothing guaranteed. All right, we're going to get a timeout here. It's top of the hour. We got Sports Center coming your way. After the top of the hour, we're going to shift gears. We got a lot of football to talk about, and there's a lot of controversy. Do you remember the New Orleans Saints Bounty Gate from a couple of years ago? The Bounty Gate scandal that got Sean Payton, head coach of the Saints, suspended for an entire season? Well, guess what? Now there is talk of more bounties in the National Football League, but not in coaches' offices and not in locker rooms, in broadcast booths. And it's got everybody's tongues a-wagging. We're going to wag ours and ask you to join us as well right here, coming up on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
The Ticket.
We still got the same pitching staff. I still believe in my pitching staff. I still believe in we can do it. We got to play the game hard. We got to outplay them. We got to play better than them in order for us to win. Hopefully we do that. We got a good chance. We got to continue to play the game hard, you know. It's just, there's a lot of games to play.
Talking to a couple guys, it'd be pretty nice to do it in front of our fans, you know. We did what we had to do when we came here. You know, to be able to take 2 out of 3 in this hostile environment, it's pretty impressive. It'll be nice to have our fans going crazy, pumping us up, you know, hopefully be able to have a chance to do it in front of them.
We have all the faith in the world in JT. He's pitched well these last couple months. We have nothing but faith in him.
We put ourselves in a fantastic position with 22 games at their place and having 2 chances to win 1 game out of our place, which we're a pretty good ball club when we do here. 7-game series, it's going to happen for both sides. They've seen our pitchers now, too. We can only get better versus Arrieta. I mean, we no-hit us through however long, and so we got to figure to improve upon that a little bit. And if you look, Tomlin's been great after losses for us, so he's been pretty much our stopper. So it's going to be a good matchup. It'll be a fun game. It'll be a tough one to win, and looking forward to it, though. It'll be ideal. We have a better situation to do it now. Ask anyone, we'll take it wherever we can get it. But, yeah, it'd be nice to finally do it in Cleveland in front of our fans. You look at our beating Detroit to clinch the division. Boston, Toronto are both there on the road. It'd be nice to actually do one in front of the home crowd, so we're hoping we can get it done.
3 days off is going to be plenty, coming off of 58 pitches. He's been making really good pitches the whole postseason. I think he's going to go out there and do it again for us. I think they've hit a wall a while ago, and I think they're just battling through it. You know, they've all looked really sharp. I think getting them out there often has actually helped command and things like that, especially the relievers. Obviously, you couldn't keep up this pace forever. You know, I think they got 2 more games of really good pitching left in them.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Rolling on into hour number 2, are we? 11 minutes after 4, right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader. Baseball frenzy, obviously. Game number 6 of the World Series tonight. Really good conversation with Al Yellen. I think it's safe to say he and they sound very confident that the Cubs, Jim Cushlin, are ready to, you know, kind of make history or add to history among the very, very select few teams that have come from down 3-1 to win the World Series.
Well, and they need to be. I mean, you know, they're at the same time, you know, we're from that Indians perspective, so it's kind of understandable. But, you know, the Cubs still put themselves in that position. They were clear, to me anyway, they were clearly pressing, especially in games 3 and 4 at Wrigley, to try to hit home runs. And instead they, you know, tapped out to Lindor or what have you. Yeah. They put themselves in that position.
Yeah, they did. They did, and they are apparently very confident right now. At least their fans are, and maybe that's a lot of, you know, wishful thinking, and maybe it's, you know, I believe because they're convincing themselves they have to believe. Because after everything they've suffered, the whole 1908 story and everything else, maybe they just, you know, are confident because they have to be confident. They have to feel like they're confident. They have to tell themselves they're confident, even if they know that it's a very, very tough road to hoe to try to win 3 in a row against the hottest team in baseball in the World Series. And nobody has been hotter through the playoffs than the now 10-3 in the postseason Cleveland Indians.
Yeah, and they should, to a certain degree, feel confident. I mean, this is a team that, you know, won 103 games, had the best record in baseball, all that stuff. What did they win? They won their division by feels like nearly as many games as the Indians won back in 95. They won it by a ton. So they have been the overall best team in baseball pretty much until this World Series began and the
That's
Indians
right.
went up 3-1. So to a certain degree, I can totally understand them feeling confident. And the one thing that Al
But what I'm saying, though, Jim, is I don't think they're as confident as they're telling themselves
they are.
Oh,
sure.
I think a lot of this is psychological.
You have to sound like that.
Because you have
to
win
yeah.
3 in a row. And I don't care that you won 103 in the regular season. The regular season is over. I do care about the fact that you are down 3-1 in the World Series. And to win 3 in a row against a team as hot and as pitching as great as the Indians, even with Trevor Bauer's 2 poor starts, and really this all comes down to Bauer. The only pitcher the Cubs have proven they can beat is Trevor Bauer.
That's true.
That's it. Everybody else that has pitched, Kluber twice and Tomlin, they can't touch. And the bullpen, they can't touch either. So to me, as long as Trevor Bauer stays out there in the pen and does, or in the dugout of the clubhouse, then I feel very, very good about things. So I think they're talking themselves into more confidence than I think they actually have when you think about what the task before them is.
Oh yeah, and something that Al pointed out, and a great guest we had last segment from that Cubs point of view, something again, the players will never admit to any of us in public, but you got to wonder how much it went to their heads in those first couple games with the zoo that was Wrigley over the weekend. And to a certain degree, you know, I'll give Al the benefit of the doubt. I think they might be a little bit more relaxed not being amongst all that zoo that was going on there, even though it's, you know, it's going to be a little bit of a zoo tonight in Cleveland. Heck, yeah. The Cavs have moved their tip-off time till 6 o'clock,
right.
So that could be over, you know, in time to only miss maybe an inning or two. But, you know, there's still something a little different about Wrigley, and this is the kind of thing players would never admit on the record, but I'll give Al the benefit of the doubt. Maybe they are, and we'll know that within the first 2 innings, maybe even through the first inning, top and bottom, if that's true, that they're a little more relaxed not being there.
And I'll say this again, what I said before, and I'm going to get onto some football issues. Josh Tomlin is going to be as mentally prepared for this as anybody could possibly be. This is the kind of guy he is. And, oh, by the way, his arm should be perfectly fine on short rest. He only threw 58 pitches in Game 2. So this guy is – or Game 3, beg pardon. So this guy is absolutely fresh and ready to go. His one other time he pitched on short rest, only once in his career, it was in 2010, his rookie season. And in that short rest start, he gave up just 1 run in 5 1/3 innings against Toronto. Now, that doesn't mean a whole lot 6 years later, but it does show that this guy isn't afraid of the short rest thing. It's not going to be something that psychs him out, especially when they kept his arm fresh by limiting him to the 4 2/3 and the 58 pitches total in Game 3 that he threw. All right, want to get into a couple of other issues NFL-wise. Last show, we got into a pretty good discussion about Cam Newton and about whether or not he is right to complain about the hits he takes in the NFL, and the fact that he actually said in a post-game press conference that he doesn't feel safe out there, and he's going to address this because it's horse crap. He's going to address this with Commissioner Roger Goodell. Well, my response to that was yesterday, if you didn't listen to the show, just briefly, my response to that was Cam Newton probably needs to stop just a little bit, get a little bit of maturity, maybe have a warm cup of shut the hell up, and stop complaining. Because his style of play and his physical size is leading to a lot of the hits he is taking that he feels that are unnecessary. My comparison, if you recall, Jim Cushlin, who did I compare him to yesterday?
Oh, geez, now I'm drawing a blank here.
That's all right. I know you don't listen to the show sometimes. It's okay. I said he needs to stare eye to eye and have a conversation with Ben Roethlisberger.
That was it, yeah.
Because Ben Roethlisberger is literally the clone of Cam Newton, or vice versa, since Roethlisberger is older, that Newton is his clone. They're both about 6'5". They're both about 240 or 245, and they're both incredibly strong. The biggest difference being Cam Newton's speed. He's much faster than Roethlisberger. But nobody, I said, takes more hits in the National Football League that don't get called as personal fouls than Ben Roethlisberger. And it's because he likes to get outside of the pocket and extend plays. Now, he doesn't run and try to gain first downs as much as Cam Newton does, but he likes to run to extend plays to get more time to throw to make plays. And he takes far more shots than anybody else in the league, including Cam Newton. And that was just my view yesterday. I felt really, really good about it, however, when I found out late last night. Actually, was it last night or was it this morning? I guess it was this morning. What Steelers right tackle Marcus Gilbert had to say about this. He essentially said the very same thing that I said. A Steelers player, offensive tackle Marcus Gilbert, has said of Cam Newton, declaring that he doesn't feel safe out there and that he's going to talk to Roger Goodell because, quote, enough is enough. Marcus Gilbert said, if you're out there and you're scared to take a shot, then don't be out there, especially if you're a running quarterback. Defenses, Marcus Gilbert of the Steelers says, are going to take shots at you. Just the way his style of playing football and how he celebrates, I guess he gives the guys a chip like, let's go hit the reigning NFL MVP. But Ben, speaking of his own teammate, Ben gets hit more than anybody in the league and he never complains. Come on, man. This is the game of football. How about that? That's Marcus Gilbert making the same comparison I made yesterday, and I don't play for the Steelers, but it just makes perfect sense if you look at who gets hit the most and look at what are the coincidences here. They're both giants of men. They dwarf their competition. They're as big as NFL linebackers and almost as big, taller than most NFL defensive linemen. When they take shots, they don't resonate as much because they're not being knocked to the ground all the time on those shots, the way smaller 6'1" quarterbacks are. Or Tom Brady, 6'2" Tom Brady and 190 pounds, and Drew Brees, and these kinds of smaller, more frail guys take the same shots. They go down, and they get calls. But Ben Roethlisberger takes those shots, he doesn't go down, he doesn't get the calls. Big Cam Newton takes those shots, doesn't go down, he doesn't get the calls. Gilbert protects Ben Roethlisberger, and Roethlisberger has been sacked 450 times in his 12-plus seasons. He misses at least a couple of games a year with injuries, sometimes due to questionable hits. Never once has he said, man, enough is enough. I'm going to go talk to the commissioner. Marcus Gilbert says, if you don't feel safe, then don't be out there, because this is a joke. Now, I tie that story in to the other big story of the day regarding football and regarding contact. You probably followed this a little bit this morning. They talked about it at length on Mike and Mike. I read about it in a lot of newspaper articles online today. NFL Network broadcaster Brian Baldinger, who played in the league for a little while, not a star player, just a solid player, just a player, basically. Brian Baldinger still works for the NFL as a broadcaster with NFL Network, so you technically are working for the league, which is why this is such a big deal to a lot of people, including Greeny, who was just apoplectic this morning. I felt like Mike Greenberg was going to cry because of what Brian Baldinger said about Cowboys running back and former Ohio State Buckeye Ezekiel Elliott. Brian Baldinger doing an interview in Philadelphia on a radio station there on Friday. So this is before, obviously, the big showdown between the Eagles and the Cowboys for control of the NFC East, right? He did an interview in Philadelphia, and what he said was he expressed a little bit of a dislike for Elliott because of his style, but he essentially said that for the Eagles to win, telling the Eagles audience there, again, he represents NFL Network, but he's talking to a Philly radio station, right? So he's saying to the Eagles fans, for them to try to beat the Cowboys, they're going to have to take Ezekiel Elliott out of the game. And that means take him out of his game and stopping him, but also in the same kind of, braggadocious vernacular that goes with being an NFL player or former player, it means taking him out of the game, if that's what it comes down to. and the word bounty crossed his lips, which, of course, has set the entire NFL on edge. At a time in which everybody is worried about head injuries and injuries in general and the health of the players more so than ever before. And just 2 days after Cam Newton had that press conference on Sunday saying, I don't feel safe out there, here comes Brian Baldinger with this statement, and I quote, they've got this running back, Ezekiel Elliott, the fourth pick in the draft. He shows up at the draft in New York with a belly shirt on, a tuxedo collar, just arrogance, just screams arrogance. And it just bugs me. If I'm Jim Schwartz right now, I'm putting a picture of Ezekiel Elliott in that belly shirt from the draft up there, referring to a bulletin board. This is the guy that right now the Cowboys are making their bell cow. He's their leader. He's what makes it go. And I just want you guys to have the same amount of, I want you guys to be as irked as I am, he continued. I want you to go to bed tonight. He's, again, pretending he's talking to the Eagles players as if he was a coach. He said if he's Jim Schwartz, he's saying this to the players. I want you to go to bed tonight, the Eagles defensive coach, of course. Doug Peterson is their head coach. I want you to go to bed tonight thinking about this guy, about how pretty he is, about how good he is, because all these backs are the same. They're all pretty, and they're all special, and they do all these commercials until they just get tattooed, until you just pound them into the turf, until you just drill them, until their head hurts, so that bumblebee is flying around in their helmet. So he just didn't know how hard he just got blasted. End quote. Now, if I stop the story there, there's already controversy. Here's a former player who played at a time when people weren't talking very much about head injuries or general overall safety of the players because the players knew what they were doing was a violent sport, and they just played it knowing it's going to get violent. And they're going to deliver violence to other people, and they're going to receive violence sometimes from their opponents. That's just the way that it was. Now he's just a broadcaster, however. And when he says something like, pound them into the turf, drill them until their head hurts, so that bumblebee is flying around in their helmet, so he didn't even know how hard he just got blasted, when he says those things, immediately you know that the antenna of the league go up. The antenna goes up for Roger Goodell and for everybody who's a part of the player safety protocols. But it didn't end there, because the next thing he said was perhaps the most controversial. Brian Baldinger said, and I quote, this is the guy that we got to hurt. This is the guy that we got to take out of the game. There's got to be 10 guys that want to hurt him every single play. In fact, we may even put a little bounty on Ezekiel Elliott. Let's get to Alfred Morris. End quote. Alfred Morris is, of course, Elliott's backup in the running game in Dallas. So here we go. And again, this was a big topic of conversation on a lot of talk radio and TV today and columns and blogs and everything else. And I just want to throw this at you and then see how you feel about it at 866-240-1065. I am tired of babying guys who have chosen to play a violent game in which to make their living. I mean, listening to Greenberg this morning was so painful. And I like Mike and Mike. I reference them often because I listen to them often. You notice I don't reference Lebatard very often because I don't like them. But I like Mike and Mike, and I like Russillo and Cannell too. But Greenberg was just so whiny and so cryy about all of this, about, you know, how dare he say blah, blah, blah. Meanwhile, Golic, a former player who gets it. Ryan Clark, a former player who gets it. And even Herm Edwards, a former player from a different era than Ryan Clark and Golic. I mean, really, they kind of had it covered there because Edwards played in the 70s. Golic played mostly in the 80s. Ryan Clark just retired a couple of years ago. So they kind of really have, you know, different eras of the league covered. And the way they approached, you know, the game in terms of safety differs over the course of those various generations. But all three of those guys in studio, with the exception, of course, the fourth guy, Greeny, who didn't play the game, all of them said, you got to chill about this. First of all, Brian Baldinger is not a coach the way Sean Payton was. And when this whole thing with former defensive coordinator Greg Williams in New Orleans, in which they talked about bounties and they talked about putting some money into a kitty, and whoever knocks the star player out of the game gets this kitty. And that's what got the suspension for Payton and got a bunch of draft picks taken away from the Saints and all of the entire mess there. This is a former player who's just a broadcaster now, and he was just on a radio show talking. He's not in a position to influence or to direct anything such as a bounty or anything else in any NFL locker room. So already they're overplaying and I think overstating the significance of this issue with Brian Baldinger. Okay? He's not in a position to control anything. But taking that a step further now, as Golic and Clark and Edwards all said, this is just football. The bottom line is what Baldinger said is right. If the best player on the other team is Ezekiel Elliott, you know what we want to do? And this is Golic saying, our motto was put more hats on him until he doesn't get up. Now, you're not trying to injure, but you are trying to hit him hard enough to make him leave the game. Put enough hats on him until he doesn't get up. That's the bottom line. Now, is that a bounty? No. Now, he said there might have been informal bounties like, you know, hey, whoever knocks somebody out of a game with a legal hit, by the way, cheap shots, you don't get paid. Because cheap shots, you're hurting the team. You're going to get a personal foul anyway and probably a fine. Cheap shots or late hits or any of those kinds of things don't. But if you play good, solid football and your goal as a defensive player in every play is to hit your opponent as hard as you can possibly hit him, that's your job. As Herman Edwards said, the goal here is if it's a receiver, make him not want to come back across the middle again by us how hard you hit him the first time. If you hit him hard enough the first time and he doesn't get up, great, you did your job. Now he's out of the game and a backup, a lesser caliber player is in. That's your job. If he does get up, make him remember what it felt like the last time he came into your territory. Hit him hard enough to knock him from the game or at least off his game. Ryan Clark, the more modern of the players, retired just 2 years ago, said the exact same thing. That the goal of every defensive player is to hit the other guys to the point where they can't be as effective as they were before because they're a little bit fearful. The way Cam Newton is expressing fear right now. That is their goal. It is not illegal. It is not different. And quite frankly, it is an insult in my estimation. This is just me talking. This isn't what Clark or any of the others said. It is an insult to the memory of some of the hardest hitters who ever played this game to suggest that you can't talk about hitting the other guys hard enough to make them leave the game because it's just not the polite thing to do to a fellow player. And that's what Greeny and so many of the others who are just whining about this are essentially saying. That you can't say, put a bounty on him. Look what happened with New Orleans. And what Golic and the rest of them are saying, and I think is spot on, is that guess what? There have always been those same exact type of mentalities. It's just that people don't like the words anymore. Used to be, if somebody said, yeah, we're going to hit him so hard, to make him not want to come back, it used to be like, yeah, that's the Intimidator. That's Jack Lambert. That's the Intimidator. That's Lawrence Taylor. That's Ronnie Lott. That's Kenny Easley. That's, Jack Tatum. Now it's, oh, my God. That's a dirty player. That's a guy who doesn't have any regard for other people. Doesn't he know that this is just a game? Doesn't he know that the health of the players comes first? This is not new. What Brian Baldinger said to that Philadelphia radio station about wanting to knock him from the game and wanting the Eagles to knock Ezekiel Elliott from the game if he's the defensive coordinator for Philly is not new. It's just that now, because of all of the sensitivity, Because of all of the political correctness, because of all of the, we have to be kind and courteous that seems to be pervading society, even in places where kindness and courtesy are not required, and as a matter of fact, they have no place, such as on a violent football field, people don't want to hear that anymore. They were getting texts and tweets this morning from people saying, this is why the ratings are down. I don't want to see people get hurt. And I would submit to you, it's just the opposite. They're going so far out of the way to take violence out of the football game. Remember the hit that the backup running back, what was his name, Andrews, put on Jordan Poyer of the Browns a couple weeks ago we talked about? Perfectly legal. Above the belt, but below the head and shoulders. Down in the chest. But he just hit him so hard, they said he was a defenseless player. It was a blindside hit, so therefore you can't do that. They're taking football out of football, and that's why people aren't watching. Along with a lot of other reasons, but it's more that than it is the other way around. Let me tell you something else. Here's where I'll disagree with some like Golic who are saying that there is a difference in the professional level and at the youth level? Because somebody tweeted in and asked, hey, what about how do we teach this aggressiveness in kids and youth sports? And they said, you don't teach aggressiveness in youth sports. You teach fundamentals. And while I do agree with the teaching of the fundamentals, I'm sorry. If you're playing a game in which kids are supposed to hit one another, then guess what? You also have to teach the aggressiveness. You do. My son plays eighth grade football. And I'll tell you something. This is not a made-up story for the purpose of embellishing my argument here with this story from Baldinger. All right? Because I'm an assistant coach, we teach those kids on our defense, we have said these words to them. When this guy, and we'll tell them to read their keys, and when this back, you know, leads this direction, if your key is the fullback, meet him in the hole and blow him up. Make him want to go home. Make him not want to play football anymore. We teach our kids this. And you want to know why? Because the other coaches are teaching their kids this. And whoever is more aggressive is going to end up hurting a kid who is more tentative. That's just the way that it is. We teach them. Make that kid wish he was home playing video games and make him go over to the stands and say, Mom, I really don't want to play anymore. That's how hard you need to hit him. Is it because we want to injure the kid? No. It's because we want our kid to be on the delivery side of the hit rather than on the reception side of the hit. You want to deliver it, you don't want to receive it. And if the other guy is going to go as hard as he can, you doggone well better have your guy going as hard as he can or your guy gets hurt. It's just that simple. It's a violent sport. It's a contact sport. And you don't play contact sports with half efforts. Otherwise, you get injured. And I'll tell you something else. Going back to my own son's experiences, one of the biggest games they had of the season, second to last regular season game before the playoffs started. We needed it to get the second seed in the playoffs. The other team had a big running back, a 6'1" running back in eighth grade. All right. Now, I got a tall kid, but he's not that tall. And this kid was a big, tall, long, fast kid, but he didn't look especially bulky. He looked tall and lanky and fast, and he could turn the corner on you and go the distance. So what did we tell our kids? We told our kids when he runs in between the tackles, when he's not trying to turn that corner, that's when you beat him up. Legally, of course. When he goes off tackle, you don't just bring him down, you deliver blows. You put that shoulder into his torso. You put it into his ribs. You put it into his chest. You make him feel every single carry with your hits to the point where he doesn't want to play anymore. That's what we told him. And you know what happened? In the first quarter, he turned the corner and ripped off an 80-yard run for a touchdown. By the middle of the second quarter, you know where he was? Sitting on the bench next to his mom, holding his mom's hand. Literally. And it was the best feeling our kids had all season long. We took this kid who we knew was the head of the snake, the guy that if we could stop him, we can beat this team. And we physically beat him. Not one late hit, not one cheap shot, not one headshot, not one back of the legs. All of it just legal, solid, hard hitting. And the kid who was hit so hard didn't want to finish the game. He literally sat on the bench holding mom's hand. And our kids looked over there after the game and just kind of smiled quietly to themselves because that's exactly what you have to do. That is football. The word bounty doesn't change it. The word, again, there is a difference between the words hurt somebody and injure somebody. Nobody is trying to injure anybody, but you are trying to put enough of a hurting on them when you hit them to the point where they either don't want to play in the game anymore, or at least if they do, they don't want to come into your territory anymore. They don't want to deal with what you have for them anymore. And that's exactly how I feel about this. So they're going to go try to I already read three blog items today or columns today. One was in the Washington Post didn't write it. This is NewJersey.com. Calling for a fine for Brian Baldinger. NFL should hurt crass analyst Brian Baldinger in the wallet. Fine him for suggesting that the Eagles should go out there and try to play as hard as they can defensively and hit Ezekiel Elliott as hard as they possibly can to knock him from the game. Not to injure him, not to threaten his career, but hit him hard enough that he can't be as effective as he was if he can play at all anymore. And he used the word bounty, and so they want him fined. I say the whole thing is nonsense. Let the guys play. The word bounty doesn't mean literally that we're trying to get somebody injured. It means we're going to hit him hard enough to make him not want to be on the field anymore. Bill in Monroe, you're on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Thanks for sitting through my big soapbox presentation there, Bill, but I wanted to get it all out before you came on. Go ahead, sir.
You are absolutely correct. This is exactly why NFL ratings are low. It's because they are taking the violence out of the sport. If these guys don't want to get hit, go play flag football. You know, second thing, take a look at boxing and what happened to boxing as they started to make boxing a pansified sport. That's why MMA rules and boxing has gone on the wayside. This is a violent sport. If you don't want to play it, go home. Thank you.
That's a great call, Bill. I appreciate it, and I could not agree with you more. That is exactly correct. You choose what you do for a living, and you know the dangers going in. And you decide whether you want to be a part of that and risk that or not, and whether you want to test yourself and your manhood against his manhood. And I'm going to try to hit you as hard as I can and make you not want to come back here. And the other dude's over there saying, oh, yeah, watch me, because I'm going to hit you harder than you hit me, and you're going to want to stay over on the sideline. That's the name of this game. That'd be like a guy being angry because his life is in danger when he decides to become a high-rise construction worker. What? You want me to walk on that 6-inch wide beam 100 stories above the earth? No way. Well, wait a minute. Didn't you take the job as a high-rise construction worker? Yeah, but that's too high, man. You don't like it? Go get another job. Go work on the ground somewhere. Be a bricklayer. Be a concrete pourer. That'll be a little bit closer to the ground for you. But don't take the job and then tell everybody you don't like how unsafe that job is. You do it knowing the risks. And it's the same exact way with these football players, Tony in Perrysburg. You know the risks. That's how you. That's what you take. Tony, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, guys, can't agree with you anymore, Bob. It's just more of the wussification of this whole country right now.
Amen.
I got a son who's in grade school, plays Pee Wee football. I tell him, plays linebacker. Make him pay the price. They come over a minute, make him pay the price. Make him make sure, and this kid, tell him, you hit them, they don't hit you. That way you don't get hurt.
That's exactly right. Because I promise you, if the other dad or coach is telling his kid, hey, when you go across the middle there, you take that guy out. Legally, of course, you hit him up high. You hit him, hit him with your head up, no spear, and all the stuff that you teach kids. But if he's teaching him to hurt your kid, or in other words, to hit your kid as a part of this contact sport, and your kid isn't ready for it and going to do the same thing back, then your kid gets hurt. That's the name of the
game. I tell him all the time, when you hit somebody, you put your face on the ball and you run through them.
That's exactly right.
That's it.
And guess what? Guess what? It takes sometimes a special athlete to be able to do that, even at the kid level. Herman Edwards said it this morning on Mike and Mike. He said, I'm going to tell you point blank, this sport isn't for everybody. Not everybody can play football. Not everybody can have the mentality that says, I'm going to drill you. And if you want to stop me, go ahead, but I'm going through you. If you don't have the mentality you can go through somebody, then it's probably not your sport. There's no shame in it. There's no embarrassment in it. But go play baseball or go play basketball or go play tennis or go do something else where you don't have to really contact people because this is a contact sport. And if you choose to play it, then that's how you have to play it.
Now, with Cam Newton, I want to touch on this, too. I don't want to hear this baby crying. In this area, we know all too well that a bad offensive line will kill quarterbacks. How many good quarterbacks have we had in this area between Detroit and Cleveland that have had their careers ended because they took too many hits? All legal, all of them are penalties.
That's a great point. Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know what? Since we're staying in the area, we can go over a little bit to the West Indianapolis and look at Indian Andrew Luck. Look at how many times this is a great quarterback.
Absolutely.
Who's getting the living crap beaten out of him. His career is going to be shortened because of the offensive line. But guess what he's not doing? He's not complaining, saying, you know what? I don't feel safe out here. They're not protecting me enough and the referees aren't doing enough for me. He understands he's in a contact sport. His job, his team's job is to get guys to protect him. And it's his job to realize and recognize when I need to slide, when I need to get rid of the ball so I don't take that extra shot, when I need to run out of bounds instead of trying to push forward for two more yards. That's the kind of thing Cam Newton does, and then he complains that he's getting hit too much.
Well, not only that, but a lot of these guys, I mean, the David Carr, perfect example. You know, guy with all the talent in the world coming in, had great expectations, and he took too many hits.
Yep.
It's not for everybody.
No,
you
it's
not. You've got to be able to
take
the hit.
And kids need to realize that. And I got to run, my friend. Tony, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Kids need to realize it. Dads need to realize it. Put your kid out there in football if he's interested. But if he just kind of says, Dad, I don't like this. I don't like getting hit. Then you know what? Maybe he's one of the kids that for crying out loud. Who was I just talking about on ESPN? For crying out loud, the coach, Herm. I kept wanting to say Norm. Herm Edwards. As Herm said, it's just not for everybody. For the guys that it is for, they get it and they know it, and no amount of talking is going to be a problem for them. And for the guys that isn't for, they'll quickly realize and go find something else to do. All right, we got more time for more of your phone calls, but I need to take this time out and tell you about the national championship flyaway. We only have, about 10 more days. The contest stops on the 11th of this month for this tremendous opportunity to go to the national championship game, January 9th in Tampa, with the trip for two, round-trip airfare, four-night hotel stay. You get a rental car with parking. You get two tickets to the game, and you get a trip and a tour of the Yuengling Brewery in Tampa, Florida. That's a $5,000 prize package. If you don't win it, you could win a trip for two to the Michigan-Ohio State game November 26th with limo service to Columbus. And the third-place prize is a prize package from Yuengling. To qualify, be the fifth caller right now to 866-240-1065, and you can also register online at 1065theticket.com once per day. Good luck to you from Yuengling Lager, Yark Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram, Country Hearth Fireplaces and Stoves, Allegiant Air at Toledo Express Airport, Total Image Limousine, and Toledo's ESPN 1065 The Ticket. We'll come back and get a few more phone calls before we're done right after this.
1065. Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza on 1065 The Ticket.
Yeah, yeah, final segment of the extravaganza this afternoon. World Series coming up tonight, game number six. A championship is on the way for the Cleveland Indians tonight. How do we know this? Because
there is no tomorrow. There is no tomorrow.
There is absolutely no tomorrow. They've got to win tonight if they want to win the World Series. I'm convinced of that. Now, if they lose tonight, I'm sure I'll be on the air tomorrow trying to defy all the conventional wisdom and tell you they can win anyway. But history doesn't say it so. History says that the team that wins game six, especially if you are already up 3-2, you win the World Series. Obviously, if it's a clinching game, that's a given, obviously. But the home team in game six of the World Series has won four straight game sixes, six of the last seven, nine of the last 11, 14 of the last 17, and 15 of the last 19. That's the good news. The bad news is, if you lose game six of the World Series and you are up 3-2, you go on to lose the World Series in game seven, nine out of the last 11 times.
I'll even go one worse for you. I did some research a while ago on this subject. The teams, whether it's World Series or best of seven version of the LCS, being down 3-1. And there are various teams over the course of time that have completed the comeback. You know what a vast minority is, because it's only happened twice, 92 NLCS, 08 ALCS, somebody being down 3-1 and then forcing the game seven but losing. What I'm trying to say is, if you're up 3-1 and eventually get to say game seven, you who had the three wins probably going to lose.
Yep, that's there's some bad history, bad mojo there, no doubt. That's why I keep screaming it over and over again, or at least I keep asking Apollo Creed to keep screaming at that.
There is no tomorrow. There is no tomorrow.
By the way, let me throw this at you, too. I was talking to Al Yellen about the Indians pitching. Do you know that the Indians' 1.68 ERA this postseason ranks fourth in the history of postseason baseball?
And that
among
means we're
teams
counting
with at least
World
seven.
Series.
Let me get it out. Among. Let me do it again now. I'm up fourth all time in postseason baseball among teams with at least seven games played, trailing only themselves, the 1920 Indians, who were had a 0.89 ERA over 61 innings pitched over seven games. The 1983 Orioles, 1.10 ERA in 82 innings pitched over nine games. And the 1919 Reds, Cincinnati Reds, 1.63 in 72 innings pitched over eight games. So the Indians are pitching at a historic level. And oh, by the way, I mentioned before, the only guy that the Cubs have beaten in this World Series is Trevor Bauer, twice. Josh Tomlin and Corey Kluber, the Indians game's six and seven starters. Yeah, well, they have combined, Tomlin and Kluber, to allow just six earned runs in 45.2 combined innings pitched this postseason for an ERA of 1.18. So just so you know, Cubs, you got your work cut out for you. That's why I believe championship time is tonight. Dean in Toledo, let's get back to the NFL and the issue of hitting and bountying and all the rest. Hey, Dean, you're on the air. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
Good, brother. What's going on?
You know, I've been officiating football for many, many years. And the problem with kids these days, and I know you guys were talking about hit him here, the aggressiveness, you don't coach. It's either in you or it's not. My problem is these fathers that are living their fantasies through their little kids, having them out there when they don't want to be out there. That's where kids get injured.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And, you know, back in the day when we were growing up, what were we doing all summer? We were outside playing football. We were outside playing baseball. To me, football is a dying sport because these kids are not doing that anymore.
Well, they're not doing it in large part. And this is why I brought this up yesterday with Cam Newton crying and saying, I don't feel safe out there. It's the NFL MVP. It's the MVP of the league announcing publicly, knowing that millions of kids listen to him and worship him and love him because he gives them footballs, too, by the way, that the NFL MVP doesn't feel safe playing the game.
Well,
here's the kind of thing that I think hurts the game, and it hurts, the number of participants in it. You got mothers out there say the game isn't safe. Now you got players saying I don't feel safe. And the fact of the matter is, you know, maybe like Marcus Gilbert said, if you don't feel safe, this game isn't for you, Cam. If you don't like the hits, then maybe you need to find something else to do.
Do you remember a few years back when Big Ben was a rookie? He was same issue. He's a big guy, but you didn't hear him crying over the.
He has been sacked. We talked about this earlier. Maybe you didn't hear. Marcus Gilbert of the Steelers was talking about this when he was ripping Cam Newton for crying about this. He said Ben, because they're about the same size, Newton and Roethlisberger, 6'5", about 240, 245. He said Ben has been sacked 450 times over 12 years in this league, and he's been knocked out of games, and he's probably missed two or three games a season with injuries. He's never complained because he knows his job is to try to take those hits and stay and keep the play alive and try to make plays, and it comes with the territory. Cam Newton is suddenly, enough is enough. I'm going to see the commissioner because I'm getting hit too much.
Yeah, they say one play in the NFL is like being in a car wreck.
That's how hard you get hit. Depending on the player – because obviously not every receiver is impacted every play because they're outside doing just downfield blocking and they don't really hit each other. Any play in which you are contacted in a significant way, it is like a mini car wreck. The difference, of course, being in a car, we don't have helmets and pads and other things to minimize the damage. But that is exactly the case. And if you don't like that idea of being in a collision, a violent collision on a regular basis, then you're in the wrong sport. And whether you're a pro or a kid, that's what you got to recognize.
Did you know there's more concussions in soccer and cheerleaders than there are in football?
Yeah, girls soccer is the worst.
Yeah,
girls soccer, because they got these girls heading the ball, and they have no neck muscles. For the most part, young girls just don't have the physical development, and they don't have any neck muscles, and their brains are being rattled by heading the ball, as well as being tackled, and then they go to the ground, and they bang their head on the ground. Football gets the bad rap all the time, and like I said, guys like Cam Newton are contributing to that bad rap, and people ripping Brian Baldinger for saying, hey, you know what, the Eagles ought to make it their goal to put 10 hats every play on Ezekiel Elliott every time he gets the ball. 10 hats get on him and make sure he doesn't get back up, because that's how you win the football game.
But there's no problem with that. There's no bounty on that. They weren't out there to hurt him. They were out there to wear him down, and I don't see a problem with that.
I don't either.
You guys have a good evening.
Thank you, Dean. Appreciate it. Unfortunately, a lot of people do. A lot of the whiners do. A lot of the babies do. And that's a problem I have with it, too. I really just don't understand why they don't let football be football. Football is being killed. Dean just said, he's been an official, he said, for a number of years. Football is a dying game. Why? Because they don't want football to be football anymore. If they let people play it the way it's always been played, it would be perfectly fine. And instead, they're trying to change it and make it something it's not. All right, that's enough football talk now, because as I mentioned, it is winning time. The Cleveland Indians, game 6 tonight against the Chicago Cubs. Tomlin against Arrieta. I like the Indians. I think they're going to win this thing. And you know what I believe? This is going to sound crazy, probably. But Cushlin, I say the Indians win going away. This isn't going to be 3-2, white knuckling and nail biting. This is going to be the Indians get a lead early, and they coast to a win in some kind of a 6-2 or 5-2 or 6-3 fashion. They're going to get a lead from Tomlin. They're going to give it to Miller and that entire outstanding bullpen that has been untouchable all season, all postseason long, and they win going away. Championship parade being planned for downtown Cleveland sometime later this week. Christian, what do you call?
I call a much closer game, but I see the Indians doing it. It's just, I felt ever since Sunday, even before that game started, let the Cubs have one. We want to win it in Cleveland.
That's exactly what I want to see them do. I want to see them win it in Cleveland. I think it's going to be outstanding. They better get it done, because
there is no tomorrow. There is no tomorrow.
Take the punches and then come back from them stronger and stronger and stronger, because because it's gone, for crying out loud. Come on. Oh, I can't believe it. I wanted to finish the show strong. All right, one more shot at it. Let's see if we can do this thing. Because, wow, it froze on me right at the wrong time. I'll just scream it out for Rocky then. Because that's how winning is done. We'll see you tomorrow. Drive Time's next. Bye-bye.